WBAI's Pacifica Network special to hear the best coverage of Iowa Caucus Night. Pacifica Radio Network's live, on-the-ground, breaking coverage. From the caucus floors and the studios of KHOI in Ames, Iowa, Pacifica will bring you news, analysis, and experts from around the state and around the country that you won't hear in the mainstream media. Tune in from 7 p.m. to midnight right here on WBAI New York, streaming at WBAI.org.
Hi, I'm Michael G. Haskins, host of Living for the City, on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM Mondays at 11 a.m. Along with senior producer Jillian Jonas, we delve into some of the complexities of living in one of the most diverse cities in America. From the Bronx, Greenwich Village, and Lower East Side to Sunnyside, we speak with on-the-ground activists who are fighting back against mega developers and too-tall proponents that make the Disneyfication of Times Square look like child's play. We also speak with community leaders and journalists from the Lenape Nation, Black Star News, and the People's Organization for Progress, the underreported stories, hidden histories that so often get overlooked. Living for the City, Mondays at 11 a.m. over listener-sponsored WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web.
All right, so that program will be coming up in an hour. But right now it's 10 o'clock, approaching 10:01 here in New York City at 99.5 FM, WBAI, listener-sponsored, commercial-free community radio. Coming up next, Bike Snob with Evan White.
Hello, you're listening to Bike Snob. I'm Eben Weiss. In 2007, New York City built the first protected bicycle lane on 9th Avenue. Since then, we've added roughly 500 miles of protected bike lanes, and the total bike lane network is something like 1,200 miles. Last year, the City Council also passed the Streets Master Plan, which calls for another 250 miles of bike lanes over a five-year period. However, it seems like whenever there's a new bike lane proposal, someone tries to stop it. Last year, for example, when the city announced the new bike lane on Central Park West, a condo building filed a lawsuit against the city in order to stop it. Why did they want to stop it? What was the objection to a bike lane alongside a park? The park. Parking was the objection. They did not want to lose their parking. When it comes to bike lanes, or pretty much any element of street design intended to make the streets safer and more usable for people who aren't driving, the objections almost always come down to one thing: parking. Parking underpins pretty much every single debate about street design in New York City. Citywide, fewer than 50% of households own cars, and obviously that percentage is much lower in certain parts of the city. But the people who do own cars are absolutely obsessed with parking. This is hardly surprising. If you get around by car in New York City, you live and die by the availability of parking. People organize their lives around parking, sitting in their cars for hours each week so they can move them for alternate side parking without losing their spaces. Their should be in quotes, their spaces. If aliens are studying us from space, they're no doubt marveling over our obsession with tending to these vehicles that spend most of their time just standing still, occupying curb space. It's like we're nursing them. Probably the greatest irony about owning a car in New York City is how much time and energy you put into figuring out How not to use it so you don't lose your parking. It's hard to say exactly how many parking spaces there are in New York City. But the generally accepted figure seems to be something like 3 million. Much of this parking is free to anyone who wants to use it on a first-come, first-served basis. 3 million parking spaces is a lot, but it's never enough. And that's maybe the most frustrating aspect of our insistence on clinging to parking. There will simply never be enough of it, ever, ever, ever. Basically, we have two choices. Knock down buildings, pave over parks, get rid of sidewalks, and turn everything into parking lots. Or else, better utilize the space we dedicate to cars so that people can get around more efficiently without driving. We take it for granted that our streets are lined with parked cars. And we don't always think about the cost. If you walk, it can be difficult to see oncoming traffic because of parked cars. Cars are parked, in many cases, right up to the corner. If you ride a bike, you run the risk of getting doored. Forget cars in motion. Stationary cars are just as dangerous. Every car door on your bike route is a potential death trap. If you ride the bus, privately owned parked cars are occupying what could be a dedicated bus lane, for example. As New Yorkers, we all sacrifice a lot so that people who have cars can keep them on the street for free. Increasingly, people are recognizing the need to change how we use our curb space. About a year ago, the Transportation Committee of Community Board 7 on the Upper West Side was thinking about congestion pricing. They were worrying that people driving into Manhattan might try to park in the neighborhood in order to avoid the congestion charge. They were also considering the rise in deliveries because of Amazon, e-commerce, all that stuff, and the double parking and congestion that comes along with that. So they proposed a resolution asking the city to end the practice of unlimited free street parking, replacing it with residential permit parking, meters with surge pricing, loading zones, and so on. To that end, I have a guest with me in the studio today, Sarah Lind. Sarah is the co-secretary of Community Board 7 and is on the Transportation Committee. She is also running for City Council in District 6, which covers most of the Upper West Side. Sarah and I are going to talk about parking, curb reform, what's going on in CB7 with this whole no parking thing, and the city at large. And we're going to take your calls, 212-209-2877. Thank you so much, Sarah, for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. Okay, so can you tell us how this resolution came about, how long ago it came about, and sort of bring us up to speed since then?
Yeah, I mean, I think you gave a pretty good introduction of, you know, our thinking before we proposed the resolution. I would add safety. We're always concerned about safety. And, you know, it seems like at least once a year, there's another death on the Upper West Side from traffic violence. So that was on our minds. In addition to the commercial trucks being double parked, we also see more and more people using Ubers, Lyfts, in addition to cabs, those cars double parking. And at least once a month, we get requests from residential buildings where there's someone maybe who uses a wheelchair or a walker and wants to have a loading zone in front of their building so they can easily get in and out of either the cars that, you know, a car service or AccessoRide or other things like that. We noticed that there are some corridors on the Upper West Side with thriving small businesses. And some, for example, Broadway, where our businesses are really struggling. And you can see that on, for example, Columbus, that has a bike lane and better curbside use, the businesses are thriving. And on Broadway, which is the most dangerous corridor, people just don't really like walking down it, and the businesses are struggling. So kind of all those things together, along with, as you mentioned, congestion pricing, made us think we need to analyze this holistically. Like, just one-offs isn't enough anymore. We want the city to really look at this whole situation and come back to us with a plan to better use our curbside space. So, right, our initial resolution called to end the practice of free street parking. That was very controversial. We got a lot of pushback. The meeting where it would have come to the full board was raucous, and people were very upset. So we listened to our community, and we took the resolution back to the committee. We also had a big forum, separate from our meetings. We wanted to just have a forum so that we could exclusively talk about the issue. At least 100 people, probably more, came. We had speakers who are experts on the subject. And we just talked about it. We let people express their concerns. We answered questions. We took it back to the committee again. And we revised the resolution to just ask the city to look at it. You know, we're not saying we know what to do. Maybe ending free street parking is not the answer. But again, personally, I think that just unlimited free street parking without thinking about other uses, it can't go on. We can't go on with the status quo this way anymore. So even the idea of a study has been controversial. Mm-hmm. Lots of people just don't even want to open this. You know, they think of it as a Pandora's box. If the city starts looking at it, they're going to lose their parking. As you said, you know, we saw this with the Central Park West bike lane as well. People just really, when they have something that they view as their kind of privilege or right, they don't want to lose it. And they have a big incentive to come out and be very vocal about it. So we're trying to focus on the benefits to the community as a whole, because as you mentioned, you know, 50% of people in the whole city have cars. It's much less than that on the Upper West Side.
Do you have a sense of what it is?
We think it's about 20 to 30% of people have cars. And of course, not all of them even park on the street. So, you know, there's not that many parking spots on the Upper West Side. I think a member of the community board analyzed the numbers, and he thinks it's probably about 10,000 people who park on the street.
10,000 local people.
Well, who knows?
You're saying there's 10,000 parking spaces in your district.
Yeah. And actually, we did a small study, definitely not representative, but we did. There's an app called Cord, which analyzes parking spaces. You can go around and look at license plates, and we did it like once every 2 hours for a whole day. And you can see, A, that almost no cars turn over, right? They're there all day. They're just sitting, as you mentioned. And also about 20 to 30% of them were out-of-state plates. Some of those maybe are people who just have their car registered somewhere else and actually are locals, but some of them maybe are driving in. So that was one of the reasons for thinking about residential permit parking, right? That we're limiting it to people in the neighborhood. And also that we're forcing people, if they want to park here, to register their cars here, which
is what they should be
which
doing.
Which is what they should do, yeah. But there's, you know, there's pushback on residential permit parking as well. Like, how well would it actually work? There's so many people who want to park versus the number of spaces available. You don't want people to think if they get a residential permit, it means that they can park. It just means that they...
Or you don't want to incentivize people
to get a car.
Or don't have a car, right?
Exactly.
To get one because it's convenient.
Exactly.
I'm just going to butt in for a moment and just remind all the listeners out there, 212-209-2877 is the number to call. We are talking about parking. We're talking about the Upper West Side Community Board. Seven has been exploring, discussing, having heated conversations and meetings about asking the city to look into eliminating unlimited free parking and rethinking how we manage that parking. And that's something that obviously has huge implications for people who ride bikes, but for everybody, walkers, transit users, people who receive deliveries, people who use for hire vehicles, everybody. So, you know, you said a lot, and there are two things I want to kind of zero in on for the moment. The first thing is that you mentioned the various corridors in on the Upper West Side. You mentioned Columbus with the bike lane is flourishing, and you're saying retailers have trouble on Broadway, and you're saying that's also the most dangerous corridor on the Upper West Side, and that's a fascinating thing. And that, of course, in your district, in any district, as soon as a bike lane or a bus lane, as the case was on 14th Street downtown, or any change comes in, you hear lots and lots about, oh no, the merchants, they depend on their parking, they need their parking. So that's not what you're observing.
I don't think so. I mean, I think it's different in every neighborhood, of course, and in the outer boroughs, I can't speak to that. But in Manhattan, the majority of people who are frequenting our small businesses on the Upper West Side are people who live in the neighborhood. They don't need to drive to the businesses. They want to walk there or bike there. And when the street like Broadway is just kind of unpleasant to walk along, it's dangerous. It's the most dangerous corridor on the Upper West Side for both bikers and pedestrians. There's no bike lanes. So it's just not, you know, conducive to strolling along and going to your local small businesses. You know, there's obviously other factors as well. Columbus has the Natural History Museum, so it's drawing tourists as well. It has a bid. But, you know, I think that that is definitely a factor. And we also have a Broadway task force where we've been looking at how to improve conditions along Broadway, including for the commercial climate. And we really do believe that if we make it more of a destination, more of a place that people want to come and walk and bike, it will improve outcomes for small businesses, but that might mean losing, you know, some parking. Of course, our commercial corridors are mostly metered parking anyway, so that's not necessarily related to this free parking conversation, but
it is to an extent, because there are ways, we all know there are ways around the meters, and we know that there are people who know how to work that to their advantage, and there are all kinds of techniques you can use if you're, not to accuse anybody, but if you were, say, a business owner who drove to your business, you know how to keep that metered spot and to not get tickets. You know, to improve the safety, the walkability of a commercial corridor helps that commercial corridor flourish. And you know, another thing I want to touch on with what you just discussed and what we're talking about in general is, you know, free parking. And you know, what you're really talking about is looking at something that's not completely unregulated. As you say, there are meters, but the side streets, this is basically a free-for-all. And you're finding on the Upper West Side, again, I want to remind everybody, 212-209-2877, please call in. But you're saying you're seeing a significant percentage of cars that don't move, right? Did you have a percentage or an idea?
I mean, for my location that I surveyed, it was, I think, almost 30%. It's, you know, I'm sure it varies a little bit depending on the area.
30% of the cars just stay there.
Sorry. No, that was the percent of the cars that are out of state. Percent of the cars that stay there, I mean, 95%.
Okay. Yeah. Right. And, you know, so that goes to privilege. And, you know, to have free parking. And this is not to say there aren't people out there in New York, even on the Upper West Side, who do need a vehicle for one reason or
Absolutely.
Another. You know, nobody's saying that case does not exist. But you talk about New York City, where we pay a premium to live here. We pay a premium for our living space. We pay a premium for everything. Space is our most precious commodity after, of course, our safety and health. It is an extraordinary privilege to own a car and to have a free place to put it, and not just a free place to put it, but really there is an incredibly powerful sense among car owners. And you know, I'm a car owner too. I freely admit that. So, you know, I know what I'm talking about. And, you know, I understand when you own a car, you have an idea, not just that there's free parking, but that it's your parking. We have this idea of my space. And I just want to mention a story. This was in 2017, but New York One did a story in 2017 about bike lanes and parking. It was about bike lanes displacing parking spots or whatever the case is. But from that story, I'm going to read to you from that story, this 2017 story. For 13 years, Ben Bowman has taken part in a ritual all too familiar to city car owners who park on the street. Twice a week, he moves his Jeep from one side of West 68th Street to the other to make way for street cleaners. With space at a premium, things can get ugly, such as the time another driver snuck into a spot Bowman had been waiting to take. Now, this is a quote from Mr. Bowman. Quote, "I went to my truck and pulled out my tire iron and stood by his door. And I said, you can have this spot, but you're taking a beating when you get out." Okay.
Wow.
So this is, I don't know if West 68th Street is in your district.
It
okay,
is.
You're not, right. It doesn't matter. This is West 68th Street. Here's a person on camera. This was aired. This was a broadcast news piece on New York One, standing there saying to a camera that he threatened someone with a beating with a tire iron to hold on to his space. And this is just an extraordinary situation. It's an extraordinary state of affairs. And it's incredible how powerful this feeling of entitlement is. So are you seeing this at these meetings?
Absolutely. The entitlement is very strong. I mean, I do want to, you know, call out a point you made, which is there are some people who need their cars.
Yeah.
And we've been hearing that a lot. A lot of people coming to the meetings to express, you know, why they need their cars. They have a elderly mother who lives in New Jersey and they need to be able to visit her once a week and there's no public transportation. They, you know, we hear from freelance journalists who need to be able to get all over the city quickly to catch a story. You know, there's others. But then, you know, we also hear from people who use their car to go to their vacation home every weekend, right?
Yeah.
I have less sympathy for those people. And, you know, that is a privilege, as you said. I think that's the right word. And then we also hear from people that, you know, the people who can park their cars in garages are the truly privileged people. Sure. Of course. But again, most Upper West Siders don't own a car at all. So they're not parking in a garage or on the street. You know, we've tried to be respectful and listen to these people and understand where they're coming from. But also, as a community board, we are meant to represent the entire community. And I've noticed that the people who come out to the meetings, again, are people who stand to lose something. People who stand to gain something, they don't even know maybe that this is a conversation. They don't know what they stand to gain. So we're trying to represent those people as well. And again, just to be clear, what they stand to gain, you know, more protected bike lanes, dedicated bus lanes so the buses can move more quickly. So more people ride the buses, you know, then we get more bus service. This is something we see all the time. And, you know, Train Daddy, we're sorry to lose Byford, but I think that we know what he, you know, was working towards, and I think it will go on, that, you know, if the buses move slowly, people don't use them, then the MTA says, well, people don't use this bus, we're going to cut service. Well, then people really don't use it because it never comes. So it's a downward spiral. So we want to get it going the other way with our dedicated bus lanes. You got to lose parking for that. And then even more creative things, like, you know, people just take for granted that our trash sits on our sidewalks and you walk past it. You could have a system where you collect trash on the curb and you don't have to, you know, wind your way around huge piles of garbage. The safety issues, more daylighting at intersections, more traffic calming measures, which, you know, like neck downs and other things that require taking away parking spots. Also, interesting things like parklets and, more pedestrianized spaces. So there's a lot to gain for the people who don't own cars and for the people who do own cars.
Right. Okay. I'm going to take some calls now. We're going to take some calls with Sarah Lynn. We're talking about parking on the Upper West Side and citywide. WBAI, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, this is Mike in Brooklyn.
Hi. How are you, Mike?
Good. My question is, why do trucking companies, FedEx, UPS, Uber, Lyft, even plumber and electrician unions, all of those, they pay thousands and thousands in parking tickets. Why are they like not lobbying or pushing for loading and drop-off zones?
Do you want to address that,
Sarah? Yeah, I can take that. So I think that to a certain extent, that's just because they've put that into their cost of doing business, and it's easy for them. It's something that we deal with a lot on the Upper West Side because it is such a dense area. There's these delivery trucks double parked everywhere. They get their tickets, but they just pay them. But I agree. I think that they should, we're doing a pilot program right now with loading zones on West End Avenue. And before doing that, in order to convince DOT to do it, we did some outreach. And I definitely heard from UPS and FedEx delivery drivers that they would really appreciate that, the ability not to have to double park. But I'm not sure as a corporate policy that that's something they really care that much about. We'll see.
Well, we also have a situation where the city has something called the stipulated fine program. So
right.
These companies, it's built into their budget. The city works with them, so they get, FedEx, UPS, and so forth get obviously tons and tons of tickets, and then they work with the city and they negotiate all of that down. So, the city, in my opinion, not speaking for Sarah here, but in my opinion, it seems like what the city's been doing is in lieu of having a proper street arrangement and managing the curb properly, they're sort of treating parking tickets as de facto permits, de facto double parking permits, where it's a given that these tickets are going to be written and it's a given they're going to be negotiated down. And it's really not a sensible way to go about it. And, that's what's so fascinating about what you're discussing in CB7 is really creating a framework. I'm interested that to hear that there's so it's a residential delivery pilot.
So it's on a residential street, West End Avenue. And I think there's loading zones every couple blocks. And the idea is that a UPS truck could park there and mm-hmm. load from there rather than double parking, which is especially important on West End Avenue because it's only two lanes.
Yeah.
So when you have a UPS truck double parked, then you have cars have to go around it, increasing congestion, unsafe. So we thought it was especially important on that street. It's funny. You hear from people that they hate the delivery trucks double parking, but then they're complaining about the loading zones.
Right.
So, people who aren't really immersed in the world don't necessarily understand all the, ins and outs and nuances of the situation. They kind of want to have things both ways.
Yes. Okay. So thank you for that call. WBAI, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hi, my name's Eric. I'm calling from Williamsburg.
Hi, Eric.
I don't drive a car. I gave up my license voluntarily close to 30 years ago. I do use a cab somewhere between 5 and 10 times a year, basically only when I'm carrying a very heavy load and have a long distance to go. I find you're being way too generous right now to automobile owners because driving a car, I had a life companion who's no longer with us, who insisted on owning and driving a car, and I used to live on 81st Street. West 81st Street. She probably spent 5% of her life waiting for parking spaces for alternative side parking. I think there are much better ways to spend your time.
Yes.
And I believe also private ownership of cars and there's some reasons why it may be legitimate, also keeps us using a lot of fossil fuels that may actually be the end of the human race at one point. And I think if fewer people use cars, and you really don't need them that much, they would be interested in finding alternatives and in the process even become better people.
Okay.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. It's something I didn't mention in the, you know, what we all stand to gain from it. But the climate crisis is, you know, obviously urgent and very serious. And not just the climate crisis, but even, you know, particulate pollution as you're walking down the street, the fewer cars that are driving by, the better for all of our health, and obviously better for people's health if they're walking around or biking or doing other things than sitting in a car. So 100%, I totally agree. And also, you know, to your point that it's such a waste of people's time to be looking for parking, I think that we also need to be exploring other alternatives like car shares, you know, other ways that people can, who feel like they need a car, the other ways they can get to where they need to go and not having a car.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the city was doing or is doing a pilot program, car share parking, where they've carved out spaces that are reserved for car share. So if you, to encourage people to get rid of their cars and use car share instead. And then there's parking spots reserved just for you. There's always pushback, and there's always a reason why that's no good and why that's not fair. And I know the pushback on that people said, oh, well, now we're reserving spots just for these private corporations, you know, for Zipcar and so forth. But, you know, when you buy a Hyundai, Hyundai's getting free parking all over the city too. So it's funny how we spin that for our own, you know, to make our own arguments.
Yeah. We similarly have a pilot program for dedicated spots for electric cars, for charging stations on the street. Also got a lot of pushback on that. You know, which again, for me, it's like, I'd like to get rid of cars or, you know, reduce the number of cars on our streets. But if there's going to be cars, I think electric vehicles are an improvement. But, you know, people have their own opinions.
We can take some more calls, but I just want to say briefly before I take the next call to please, please, please become a WBAI buddy in the name of this show. Become a Bike Snob WBAI buddy. This is listener-supported radio, and the reason we're able to have this show and all the shows on this station is because of people becoming BAI buddies. We do not have Super Bowl ads. We do not have car companies placing ads on this station giving us tons of money. We have people sitting here talking about how there's too much parking. And if you want to hear this stuff, the only way to hear it, if you want to participate in this conversation, the only way you can continue to do so is to please become a WBAI buddy. So pledge, go to give2, WBAI.org. That's give2, WBAI.org. Or you can call 516-620-3602. Thank you for your support. I'm going to take another call now. WBAI, you are on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Yes, it's Emmanuel. I'm calling from Brooklyn.
Hi, Emmanuel.
Yes, how you doing? As a Brooklynite, I had no idea that this was going on the Upper West Side. I saw an episode of Seinfeld once where they were actually paying somebody to move the cars.
Right.
I had a bunch of keys,
yeah,
and he was running back and forth. And I just want to say, I mean, this sounds like an economic problem and a problem of entitlement to me. And I have an idea that I don't know how valid it is, but it could be an SUV tax or a truck tax. I mean, the cars that take up more than one space or take up a space that maybe smaller cars could fit in should be taxed in a certain way. If you're going to be there and not move your car or that vehicle and just take up like two spaces, yes, they should be taxed. I mean, I think or some other type of payment possibility should be put in effect for cars like that. And also, too, there should be rotating parking. If it's going to lead to violence, and if it's going to lead to people actually threatening each other, that's a serious situation. I just want to get your guest opinion on something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm, as a philosophical matter, always in favor of using taxes or and other incentive structures to change behavior. So I think it's a good idea. I would have to look into it because I think there might actually already be an SUV tax in the city. I'm not sure. So I would have to look into that. But as a general matter, yeah, I think it's a good idea.
I do not believe there's okay. any sort of SUV tax. I mean, the only, you know, whether you live in New York City or you live in a rural community upstate, I mean, the DMV treats registration the same for the most part. So there's nothing to stop. As long as it's, I can register it as a passenger car, there's no, and I'm willing to pay for the excess fuel costs, and I'm willing to deal with the additional hassle of parking it because I need a few more feet. There's nothing to discourage me from getting a larger car. There's nothing, no reason at all for me, you know, to opt for a Honda Fit over a, you know, a Ford Gigantotron or whatever. So, yeah.
In that case, yeah.
Yeah.
I think we should definitely look into that.
Yeah. And it really is, I thank you for that call. It's just, you know, it really is astounding and fascinating how it really is just completely unregulated, this incredibly precious commodity, and how much we really do have to gain by rethinking it, and rethinking it along the lines of how New Yorkers really live. So yes, we have a percentage of people who have cars and may be dependent on those cars and may be legitimately dependent on those cars, but it's a pretty small percentage. You have a large percentage of people who need to receive deliveries, who do not drive, who need to use transit, who need to use bicycles, who need to have their trash collected. Excuse me. I'm really glad you brought that one up, that our trash collection system is – a lot of it is working our way around cars. And I'm endlessly fascinated by the fact. And it's – again, it's something you don't think about until you do. And then once you think about it, you can't stop thinking about it. You walk down any street in the city, in the Upper West Side or in Brooklyn or wherever you are, and you look at a street lined with apartment buildings on either side. And in those apartment buildings, at any given moment, you have a boiler that needs to be maintained. You have a tenant moving in or out. You have work being done in the building. Someone's got to move a bathtub in or out or whatever the case may be. You have a delivery coming from whether it's Amazon or a local grocery store. You have all of these things happening on a busy, dynamic New York street. And then you look on either side of that street, that street's entire curb space is just cars sitting there. And the only policy, you know, for yes, we have the delivery, we have the residential delivery pilots, we have the car share pilots, we have, you know, bike lanes coming in, we do have city bike stations and things like that. But by and large, for the most part, still in the vast majority of streets, the only system we have to accommodate all of this stuff, to accommodate the maintenance person coming to work on your boiler or replace it, is to double park and to squeeze between those two parked cars. It's really astounding.
Yeah, it's definitely a lack of planning on the part of the city. And I think that it's a political problem because, again, the parkers are very loud and vocal. And I think that the city has just been very hesitant to do anything to make them angry.
212-209-2877 is the number to call. WBAI, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Marv.
Marv.
From Manhattan.
Hi, Marv.
About 60 years ago, I'm 86, about 60 years ago probably or more, I had a project and I was working perhaps affiliated with school or not, how the city could manage parking. One of the solutions I thought of was every new building would have to start on the second floor. The bottom would be for deliveries, et cetera, et cetera. The High Line, when it was converted to a park, should have been a railroad coming maybe from the Bronx Market, thereby cutting large trucks from the city, unloading to smaller trucks. Garbage, every corner, every street on the corner should have a dumpster, and maintenance superintendents should be required to bring the garbage to that, and at night that these dumpsters should be picked up. These are just some of the solutions many, many years ago. The politicians have been remiss in bringing to the city, to some of its people like myself, the ability to run a car in the city. All this could be done if the mayor, the office of the mayor, were composed of three people: the mayor, a political elector, a city planner, and a traffic person. Every city in the world needs this. A politician is not enough to run the city. They've neglected it, and some of the solutions are within reach with intelligent thinking. I'm pleased to hear that your person, your guest on the program, is beginning to think of these. But one other factor is the idea that I was brought up with the open road, America, freedom, and it was a freedom machine for me as a young man. I'd like not to destroy that.
Okay. Well, thank you for that call. I'm glad to hear that you agree that we need to rethink the way we use our space in the city. A car is a freedom machine. I think I would say there's it's not freedom in an economic sense, in that you become beholden to the car. And I don't think that it. I think it's very difficult to argue in New York City that a car is a freedom machine. But certainly, we do need to rethink the way we're using our space in the city. We're talking to Sarah Lind. Sarah is co-secretary of Community Board 7 on the Upper West Side and is on the Transportation Committee. Sarah Lind is also running for city council in District 6. I wanted to invite everybody to call in 212-209-2877. So we're talking about the city council, and you're running for city council.
I am.
Cory Johnson, speaker, has been very vocal about quote unquote breaking the car culture, which gets the bikey people, the advocates, very, very, very excited. So, What does that look like to you? And what do you think on a citywide level? How do we address this? What's your feeling?
Yeah, I mean, just to the car as a freedom machine, you know. So I grew up outside the city and definitely felt that way. You know, the second you can get your license, like, oh my God, I'm free. But the second I moved to the city and got rid of my car, I really felt free. You know, that was when I really felt like you said, not beholden to the car anymore. I could just go where I wanted to go. And yeah, in Manhattan especially, I mean, you're sitting in traffic, that's not a freedom machine. but I will say, to your point about it being a citywide thing, when I come to the outer boroughs, I mean, the car culture is very strong out here still. I think that in Manhattan, it's definitely less so, and we still have work to do, but it's less so. So I don't know if I'm the best person to speak to how to break the car culture in the outer boroughs, because it's so different. I mean, I think that you need, you know, as a pedestrian in some areas in the outer boroughs, I feel like it's not meant for me at all. You know, I get off a train, I walk two blocks, and then the sidewalks are different. Like the structures, the street structures are different. It's really designed for cars. And so I think it probably will take a lot of work in those areas to create a feeling that the streets really are meant for pedestrians and bikes rather than being meant for cars. I think we've done a better job in Manhattan, just because it's so dense. It always has been a walking place. Mm-hmm. It could be better for sure, but it's the outer boroughs, I think, that need a lot of work to break car culture.
All right, 212-209-2877 is the number to call. We're talking to Sarah Lind of Community Board 7 and City Council candidate. WBAI, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hi, my name is John. I'm calling from Jersey.
Hi, John.
I don't go into the city that often with my car. What I do, though, I always have to consider, you know, parking, when I can park, when I can't park, where I can park, when I, and all of those things. And inevitably, I end up going to a private parking lot. And this is my pet peeve. My pet peeve is that they call my car an SUV. When in fact, and I have two cars, my family, I have two cars. I have a Mazda, and I have a Subaru, and a Forester. And it doesn't measure any longer than a normal sedan. Yet, it's considered an SUV, and I have to pay more in the private parking lot to park that that so-called SUV. That's my pet peeve. As far as solving bicycle riding, which I've done a lot of because I did live in the city for many years, and I used to, I was a rep, so I used to ride my bicycle to appointments. I don't know what to tell you about that. That's just, that's a mind-boggling dilemma, you know. Hopefully people can ride their bicycles, not have people open doors in front of them or literally get run down by somebody making a turn, and can survive living in a city like New York. I mean, it's huge. It's sometimes totally out of control, and they can charge you whatever they want. Mm-hmm. That's basically what that amounts to. And that's really all I have to say about it.
All right. Thank you for the call. Sarah, anything to...
Yeah. You know, I was just going to say, I wanted to mention earlier, and I forgot, you know, I am not a biker. I don't bike in the city. And I think that the main reason that is because it doesn't feel safe to me. But when we were thinking about doing the Central Park West bike lane, I wanted to see what it was like, you know, so I got a city bike and I biked down Columbus in the bike lane. That was fine. It felt a little scary, but it was fine. And then I came back up Central Park West. It was terrifying. You know, I mean, I would not do that on a regular basis. So I think to the streets master plan point and the idea of more protected bike lanes, you know, there has to be a network. You're only going to get really committed people biking until people like me feel like they can get where they need to go and be safe the whole time. So I'm not a biker, but I might be if we could get this work done.
Yeah, and I think that's a thing that any bike advocate will say is that, you know, we have not unlocked the full ridership potential in the city, not by a long shot. And by doing that, by making riding a bike in the city comfortable for anybody who feels like doing it, you have to make it seem like a reasonable proposition, not a dangerous proposition. And, you know, here you are, a regular person. You'd ride a bike if it didn't feel so dangerous. And that's a perfectly reasonable way for people to feel. And we do have the exact opposite situation. And this ties in to the parking. There's nothing to disincentivize you from driving, mm-hmm. really nothing. As long as you are willing to put up with the hassle of parking, you're welcome to do it. There's nothing to dissuade you. And to plenty of people, because of this feeling that riding a bike is so dangerous, driving a car can seem like the sensible, responsible, comfortable, safe choice. And as far as people being angry that their parking is being taken away, certainly they're angry because they're really being told still, even today, I would say citywide that driving is the way to get around. All the signs you see, the regulations, the built environment around you is reinforcing the notion that this exists for driving. So people then take the, you know, they feel entitled to drive. And then anything that comes along to tell them they can't drive, they get upset. And meanwhile, we don't have the safe bike lanes that would make that a comfortable alternative for most people. We don't have nearly the bus lanes we need. Our buses are way too slow. So we are stuck, and we need to unlock that potential. I just want to remind everybody out there to please become a WBAI buddy in the name of Bike Snob. Please pledge your support. 516-620-3602 is the number to call to pledge to become a BAI buddy. You can also do so on the web, www.give2bai.org. That's give2bai.org. Please become a WBAI buddy so we can keep this programming coming to you. If you do not pledge your support, we cannot keep bringing you this show or any of the shows you listen to. So we're here with Sarah Lynn from Community Board 7, Upper West Side. 212-209-2877 is the number to call if you'd like to weigh in on parking policy. So there's a meeting coming up tomorrow.
Yes. Yeah, definitely wanted to mention that. Our full board meeting is tomorrow, 6:30 at Road of Shalom, 7 West 83rd Street. If this is an issue that you care about, I definitely encourage you to come out, make your voice heard. You know, again, because the community board is supposed to represent the community, a lot of members feel like what they hear from people who attend really matters, but often it's the parkers who come out the loudest because they have something that, you know, they're trying to hold on to. So we really want everybody to come and make their voices heard and make sure we have a representative, you know, audience there.
What is actually happening at the meeting? Are you voting on the resolution?
Well, hopefully. We were supposed to vote on the resolution in December, and it got sent back to committee. Again, this resolution has been in the works for almost a year now. So we really hope that the full board will vote on it tomorrow. Again, you know, as you mentioned at the beginning of the show, part of the reason, the impetus for this was because congestion pricing is coming. So we really would like the city to look at this before congestion pricing comes, which is in about a year, mm-hmm. rather than delay and delay and delay, and then congestion pricing is here, and then we're kind of playing catch up. So we really hope that our board will vote on this tomorrow and will pass it and send this to DOT and ask them to, you know, do their jobs and figure out our curbside management.
Okay, 212-209-2877 is the number to call. So what does the resolution say at this point? You've gone back and forth on it, right?
Yes, it has been revised many, many times. I don't have the full text of it in front of me right now, but really basically we're just asking for a study. We're just asking DOT to study the curbside usage and to look at all the different ways that, you know, people are using the streets, using the curbs, and how we best allocate that curbside space given all of the different ways that we need to use it.
Mm-hmm. And then giving that once you, if you pass the resolution, you're just sending this to the DOT and asking them, and then the rest is up to them.
The rest is up to them.
Sit and wait or whatever the case may be. I'm really interested in you've mentioned a number of times that it's the people who want to preserve the free parking are the loudest, mm-hmm. and you know this is unsurprising. So how is there an organization or have they organized themselves under some sort of name? I know this always seems that. So what's the name of the organization?
So they are calling themselves Common Sense Streets.
Mm-hmm.
And they are organized, which is obviously, you know, they're right, and lots of different affinity groups organize.
Okay, so Common Sense Streets is the organization, quote unquote organization, that is opposed to the parking reform. I'm going to take a call right now. WBAI, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
It's Alvin, and I would like to say that this solution is senseless. First of all, there are a lot of people who get hit and killed by bicycles. That hasn't been brought up, and they're pedestrians. The other thing is, you know, it's like there were places where you're not allowed, cars are not allowed to park, but they put bike racks there.
Right.
And it doesn't make any sense that, you know, she's talking about getting rid of cars in the suburbs where there's not complete transportation, where they're like two spheres old. People can get off a train, but they can't get to their house. This needs to be thought out more thoroughly.
I don't think, okay, you've raised a number of points. I thank you for the call. As far as people getting hit and killed by bikes, fortunately, that is something that very, very rarely happens. It does happen. The number of people who are killed by bicyclists in New York City is not zero. However, it is close. It's something like one person a year in New York City is killed by a bicyclist. And obviously, that's one person a year too many. But it's exceedingly rare for the simple fact that a person on a bicycle does not, it's physics, does not pose even remotely the threat that that a motorist does. So as far as bike racks or bike share, whatever the case may be, taking space away from cars, I'm glad you mentioned this because, you know, that really speaks so much to the opposition you hear about reforming the curb, which is that you're taking away parking. It's this always this idea that by taking away cars that aren't moving, you're somehow depriving people of something. But if you take away, if you look at the curb and instead of having a car that sits there 6 days a week and then on the seventh day it goes upstate to a vacation house or it goes to, you know, it goes to Jersey or something, if instead you have there, let's say, a bike share rack that has, you know, 10, 15, 20 bicycles that are being turned over again and again and again, that is a vastly more efficient use of space benefiting more people. So that's really what we're talking about here with curb reform and parking reform. And I want to say thank you so much to my guest, Sarah Lind from Community Board 7, Upper West Side City Council candidate. Thank you so much for coming. And can you remind everybody again where the meeting is tonight?
Yeah, tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night. Yeah. Excuse me, tomorrow
yeah,
night.
Yeah, the Community Board 7 full board meeting is at 7 West 83rd Street. That's right off Central Park West. And it's our 6:30. The conversation around this resolution is going to start at 7:30.
Okay, thank you very much. So go
thank
to that
meeting.
Thank
you for
having me. Yes, my pleasure. Okay, thanks for listening, everybody. This has been Bike Snob with Evan Weiss. Ride safe out there.
Amended and restated specifically. Who is and may now be found on the Foundation's website at www.pacifica.org for review and have been voted on by the Pacifica National Board and are to be voted on by the station delegates, followed by a membership vote.
Hello, New York. My name is Arthur Schwartz. You may know me as an activist attorney or as a founder of the New York Progressive Action Network or as counsel for Occupy Wall Street, Black Lives Matter, and Bernie Sanders. I'm proud to announce my latest foray into activism as the host of a program at WBAI. The show is called Advocating for Justice. It airs every Monday from 5 to 6 p.m. Each week, we'll talk to activists who are successfully employing strategies which address the challenges we are facing in a post-Trump and post-Hillary world. Again, that's Advocating for Justice, Mondays at 5 p.m. here on WBAI 99.5 FM. It will be movement-building time on the radio.
Amended and restated Pacifica bylaws amendments have been proposed and may now be found on the Foundation's website at www.